Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Mimi Chenfeld, acclaimed author and educator. She has written numerous books for teachers. She's teaching in the key of life and teaching by heart among them. The titles themselves could give you an idea of what she's all about. It's about children and heart and teaching and creativity. Mimi travels the country to talk with educators of every stripe about this challenge. A native New Yorker, she has settled in Central Ohio for many years, lucky us, teaching college students and working teachers alike about the art of teaching children. She's with us today in the studio. Mimi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. It's always a joy to be here.
Welcome back. You would have been here a long time ago, except you had a little slip up.
I had a boo-boo.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when you work with young children, it saves you from total insanity. So, you know, after my accident, and I came back to the center after 4 months, one of the little ones came up and said, Mimi, is your boo-boo better? And I think, I'm going to stick with that. It's so great.
Yeah, well, it's good to see you
Thank
again.
Thank you so much, dear.
Yeah, I think that there's still cutbacks in schools. School districts are looking at more cutbacks. Southwestern's looking at more cutbacks. And you know as well as anyone, often they come from music programs and
That's
arts
the first
programs.
Things to go.
And it's not, you know, you can't expect them to cut math and reading and science. But how do you keep the creativity in a district when they are facing these horrible cutbacks?
You know, this is one of the most tragic situations for our country to face. When we cut the kids, we just can't get it back. You know, you can't bring it back a year later or 2 years later and say, okay, kids, now we have some money, now you can. Because those 2 years of that 1 year when the kids are deprived, you realize that the arts are one of the reasons, the main reasons some kids even come to school. You know, they're going to get their math, they're going to get their English. When they cut music, they cut art. These are basic ways human beings learn. And these are basic ways that are entrancing to children and inviting to them of all ages. And many of them find success in these areas where they don't find success in the other areas. But not that they, you know, that they won't pass, but the joy of coming. So when we cut these, it's just, to me, a tragedy. To me, it's an amputation. And, you know, the funny thing you mentioned that I'm here in Ohio I sound like Louis Armstrong. Too bad I don't have my instrument and and it's Mardi Gras. But anyway, when we first came to Columbus, which was 1970, we came from New York, they were going to cut the arts. They were going to cut music out of the Columbus schools. And I remember one of my first acts as a new citizen of Columbus, Ohio, was to go to the board meeting, and I stood up and I just public spoke, and I went through this. I'm not a rational speaker when it's a passionate topic. I'm just not. That's why I don't go into politics. I'm too hysterical over this.
Oh, it hasn't kept a lot of people like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I said. So I remember saying, music has lived through wars. There's been music through slavery. There's been music through the Holocaust. There's been music through disasters. And here we are in Columbus, Ohio, cutting music from the children. How dare we? So to me, there are other ways. I'm sure there's a lot of waste in administrative duties and in meetings that may not have to be funded. There's ways to save money that don't cut into the heart of the children.
You know, you made the point that when it comes to the arts, for some people, that's the way they learn.
And it's one of the major ways that we know it in the multiple intelligences. You know, it's very interesting. Howard Gardner, God bless him, Harvard, 25 years ago, wrote a book called Frames of Intelligence, I think. Maybe somebody listening will remember the name of the book, in which he says, there's no such thing as one intelligence score. Like, Ann, what's your IQ? 180. Of course, I know it's about 180. And
just looks smart.
Mine is like, oh, that's my weight. Never mind. Anyway,
right.
Sorry about that. but you know, we always have this one score in our minds that this is your IQ. And he came out and said, look, not everybody learns the same way, and all the ways we learn are valid. Some people learn through music. Some people learn through seeing something on the board, written on the board in a linear way, in a verbal way, they learn it that way. Some people learn abstractly. Some people learn through kinesthetic, through movement, through action, through interfacing with your environment. We all have different ways of learning. Unfortunately, most school systems only narrow to one or two ways, and if you don't learn that way, you're dumb and you're stupid and you fail and you're, you know, you lose funding for the school and you're a child left behind. So we don't honor the ways people, you know, this is an interesting thing. Every culture learns its, every religion learns its religion through music. There's not probably maybe the Quakers because they don't say too much, but anyway, but you know, but there isn't a religion that doesn't have children learning their psalms, their prayers, their blessings through music. So why is this such a, like, duh? Why are we saying, now music is a frill and we're going to cut it out of the budget? When, you know, I do this in everywhere. I just came in from Maryland this weekend and I did a big thing with teachers. Wherever I am, I say, right now, if I said to you, can you name all the states in alphabetical order? You've got like 2 minutes. Go. Everybody sits there like, oh, like they were, you know, deer in the headlights. Then I say, is there anyone here who ever learned the song, singing the states? And there's, it has never failed, Anne, wherever I am in the country, I mean, rural Texas. Yesterday I was in Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland. Somebody stands up. And maybe three or four people from all over and go, oh, I know what I say. Come on up. And this one person was so shy, the rest of the teachers said they never saw her stand up in public. She went from A to Z singing Alabama. She just sang the song. How we learn through music. Not everybody, but many people do. And she did the whole thing alphabetically, and the whole place sat there with their mouths open. And she remembered the song from fourth grade.
I'm going to have to get that song.
Oh, it's a wonderful song.
I know
song.
The ABCs.
Yeah, there you, how did you learn your ABCs?
I'm sure that way.
And look at Schoolhouse Rock.
We were doing that with, we had the grammar girl on a few months ago, and we were playing the Schoolhouse Rock songs. It
it's
was
perfect.
Fun. Yes.
It's perfect. It's a perfect. So how we cut music out and make it accessible for children to learn that way, I mean, it's just, you know, beyond me. It's beyond me.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mimi Chenfeld, an author, educator. She lives in Central Ohio, so we're very, very lucky to have her in the studio with us today. But she travels all over the country. I hesitate to use the word lecture, but
talking with teachers about hanging out
with teachers and helping them become better teachers. We have an email right now. If you would like to email us, go to allsides@wosu.org, or you can give us a call at 614-292-8513. And the email says, greetings to Mimi Chenfeld.
Thank you.
In this economic crisis and in view of the rate of childhood obesity in this country, I decided to do Easter differently this year. I bought a little bit of chocolate for some friends' kids, but just a token treat. In addition, each household will get a box of 120 Crayola crayons. They're colorful and non-toxic, and if a kid decides to eat them, they promote creativity and are biodegradable, just colored wax and a paper label. The price per box is just under $6 at Walmart, and therefore competitive with the two small bags of chocolate eggs filled with sugared up peanut butter I saw at the supermarket this week. And crayons last a lot longer than those chocolate eggs, too. Am I being the Grinch that stole Easter?
No. Does the person have a name?
Well, I know her name, but she doesn't like us to use it.
Okay.
But she does have a name.
You are my dearest new best friend, and I don't even see your name. Thank you so much for the greeting, but perfect, wonderful. You know, I'm a big movement person. Some of you know that I've been moving with kids. You know, people say, you know, how long have you taught children how to dance? I said, I never taught one child how to dance. Children already know how to dance. We just have to keep dancing with them and not screw them up. But anyway, we will talk about that later. But that is the most wonderful, wonderful idea. There's no better gift that you could give kids than a box of crayons. And, you know, they have these wonderful different size construction paper in the dollar stores. Some of them are not the big ones. And they're like a smaller size. They're not tiny, but they're like a more child size. Mm-hmm. And they are there for a buck. And that plus a box of crayons, it's like you die and go to heaven. Thank you so much. I don't have to use my thumbs and click, 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 and video and kill somebody and not kill and win and not lose and be obsessed. but I can really have fun in a free, wonderful way. I think it's a great idea.
You know, you said there's no greater gift, and I would have to agree. I mean, we have buckets of crayons or laying around that I can't throw away. They're like a book to me. I can't throw away a crayon, even though my kid's 14 years old now. But there's the other gift of coloring with them.
Oh, that's the best. That's the best. I mean, this is going back to whatever you do with kids. If it's music, you listen to the music. If you turn on the music you love, you don't need to sign up for 12 classes for one-year-old kid so she gets her tutu before she's out of Pampers. And you have to have, and you have 10 tickets for the recital before she can stand up and walk. I mean, this is, you know, we're getting a little crazy in this country. So turn on any music you like, the music of your family, the music that you love as a kid, and that child will join you, your children will join you, and they'll have music in the house all the time. And you don't need special apparatuses for it, you know. So coloring with your kids, singing with your kids, playing with you, taking a walk with your kids. You know, it's a very interesting thing. I was talking to this kid. He's about eighth grade, and we were just talking about his life. And he said, we were talking about how much time he spends with his parents. And he says, well, really not that much because I'm busy and they're busy. He says, but my, you know, my dad takes me carpools and takes me to where, to school or something. And I said, and we talked a little. I said, well, when is the best time you spend with your parents? And he said, when my dad takes me for that 10 minutes to school. That was his highlight of his time with his dad. So we're not talking about major, you know, commitment to, you know, resurrect Leonard Bernstein and his children's programs or the Mozart effect. You know, that's a lot of, you know, that's nice. It's nice, but it's nothing. I mean, singing your songs with the children that your grandmother taught you or that you just loved when you were growing up, that's the best thing. The kids will love it. They'll just love being with you.
They just want to be with us.
That's right. They want to be with you.
With me right now, Mimi Chenfeld. We are going to return in a few minutes. In the meantime, if you have a question or comment for Mimi, great educator, very creative person. She's a lot of fun. She's not dancing around the room yet. So
yes, I am.
Okay, all right, she is. And give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Rain today, high around 50. Currently, it's just around 48 degrees and a little foggy out. Tonight, showers likely, low near 39. Tomorrow, of course, more chances of rain in the morning, cloudy with a high near 53, but we should get the return of spring on Wednesday. Sunshine with a high near 57. When you don't have time to catch the whole story, get the update with the WOSU Daily News Loop. Receive award-winning local coverage and NPR headlines emailed every weekday right to your inbox. Catch up with current events or listen to a story you missed. Don't miss a beat with the WOSU Daily News Loop. To sign up for the Daily News Loop or other newsletters available from WOSU, go to wosu.org/email.
Virgin, you know, they...
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining me in the studio today, Mimi Chenfeld, author, educator, you name it, dancer, happy person. Happy to be with her today as well. You know, Mimi, I was just reading a blog from a teacher in Australia. I have no idea how I wound up on this blog, but she wrote something that really resonated with me. She said, I feel as though I turned a corner with my class this week. It seems that we've got to that comfortable zone where we know enough about each other to be able to relax a little, even let down our guard and enjoy a bit of fun together. And it sounded like, wow, that's an important thing.
And guess what? That is the most important thing. Nothing is more important. And, you know, this is just because my tongue is still wet from saying to the teachers in Maryland, yesterday, the day before. If this doesn't happen, if you don't have an environment of trust and respect and safety, and I don't mean physical safety, I mean emotional safety, mm-hmm. where no one is put down and no one is made fun of and no one is left out. If you don't create that environment, how you do it, it's an art. It's an art. There's no formula. But this teacher, obviously, this is, you know, a caring and a committed teacher. And this is what she did. She created an environment where the kids feel safe and feel welcomed and respected and honored. If that happens, every idea will be wonderful. If it's not the way it is, if it's not the air the kids breathe, nothing will be of value. Nothing. If the children are afraid, if there are cliques, if there's bullying, if the teacher doesn't respond, if the teacher doesn't role model respect, not just the respect theme. You know, yesterday mm-hmm. I was at a school where they had different themes, like the way your studio was at all the big box, all the sections. Mm-hmm. Each one was like, the theme for this week is respect. The theme for next week is garbage. Oh, shoot, my kid had the flu. We lost respect. We lost the respect theme, so let's go on. Oh, no, we're going to be out of town for cooperation. So, you know.
Guess we won't learn that.
Guess we won't learn. So it's either the air you breathe. I say you're either on or off. It's either teaching the key of life or teaching the key of death. There's nothing in between. So that point that your Australian bloggy lady or man made is the most important. It's crucial. Because he won't have the fun unless if one child fears that he or she will be made fun of, everything will be repressed. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to me. That's why, I mean, I thought it just
you were right
was
on
a
target.
Wonderful, wonderful right thought. And, I, you know, it's something that, you know, this teacher obviously thinks about doing. It's not a byproduct. It's the product. And
that's
then everything
right.
else comes after that. And it really caught my eye because of that. 614-292-8513 if you have a question or comment. And, Tim, you know the song about the states.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the air.
Hi, long-time listener. Really enjoy your show.
Thank
Hi,
you.
Tim.
When you mentioned that someone sang, was able to name all the states in a song, I just wondered. My dad was a school teacher, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and he wrote a song that he taught all his kids, and they could all recite all the states. And I just wondered if it was the same.
Tim, could you sing it?
How about if I sing it a little bit? It was he called it Ares, Arc, Alice, Ally. Well, it's called the State Song. And he just used little short. You know, the abbreviations of each state. I'll do a little bit.
Okay.
Arizark, Alice, Ella. Kalo, Concala. No B or E, but the D is for Del. F is for Fla. How about if I stop there?
Oh, I like it.
That was very cute, Tim. Thank you. But actually, that isn't the same one, but that's a wonderful one where he has the letters.
I'll just add to that I used to hear how some of his students would win bets in bars by being able to rattle off all the states.
It's perfect. It's a perfect example. I mean, the one that I mentioned is the one that I don't know how it came to be, you know, more widespread because you don't know how things spread, but. And I never learned it, unfortunately, so I could be a complete milk dud when it comes to would you name all the states in their alphabetical order. I mean, I'm thankful I can name Ohio because, you know, when you grow up in New York, you don't know there are other 49 states. You think New York is the only state, right? You mean it
right.
isn't? But anyway, I think that's a wonderful example of his students learned it and did beautifully.
What grade did he teach, Tim?
He taught fourth, fifth. You know, some other grades at different times also, but, you know, he did a lot of neat little things like that, you know, he would hear students come back years later and, you know, say how it really helped them. And, you know, that was just one example.
And that's what they're going to remember.
Right. In fact, you know, if I was a little less shy in public, I'd sing the whole thing and I could rattle off all the states pretty fast that way.
I wish you would.
Why don't you send us an email?
But then we wouldn't hear, you.
Well, I probably have a copy of it somewhere because he had it published.
Tim, we have created an environment where you should feel safe and trust and know that you will be respected and appreciated.
Well, yeah, you don't know my last name. I guess I could pull it off.
Sure.
All right, well, I can send a copy if you want to give me an address or something.
Send it to allsides@wosu.org.
Okay,
All right. Thanks, Tim, and thanks for listening.
Yep, thank you.
Thanks, Tim.
Dana, you're on the air. You want to talk about the differences between the genders and how they learn?
I do. I have a couple of comments. Number one speaks to the how difficult it is for all of us to adjust to change, particularly children. I remember when Fred retired, I thought to myself, I don't remember getting an email from Fred. I don't remember approving this retirement. I'm not really sure about this. I've read Ann Fisher in the paper. I don't know. But I adjusted to the change, and I really enjoy your show, and I do listen to it every day.
Dana, thank you.
You're welcome. And Mimi, I love you. I miss seeing you in the post office and all around Bexley.
Well, I was out of commission for a couple of months there.
With my children in the stroller and everything, and I learned so much just by watching you and the joyfulness that you have everybody's out, even to the post office. And so I commend you for that. And
thank you, Dana.
You're welcome. I have a boy and a girl, and I don't know if it's personality or if it's gender or if it's both. Do you think there are differences in the ways that boys and girls learn? And if you do, can you tell me a little bit about that?
You know, Dana, being an old sociology major, I think that there also is a lot to do with how a society treats and expects different things from the boys and girls. And so there's a lot of learned, you know, I mean, built-in learned in a society, which I think is getting more blurry. The last 20 years, you know, it's more acceptable for boys to you know, to acquire qualities that used to be just like girl. Look at the men who are changing diapers now, you know, and strolling with children. I mean, if you think of your grandfather or my grandfather, oh, my God, I don't think they ever saw the bottom of a child, you know.
Right.
I mean, so we've seen those kind of changes. Do I think I have a friend who's into genetics, and that's what he says. That's the bait. And I really do believe you watch a child, and you don't worry about boy or girl. You just say, this is how I would do. This child loves to move. Just I'm giving you an example. This child loves music. This child loves imagination. This child is like fantasy. It could be a boy. We have friends who are boy, you know, 7 or 8 year old boys who are like fantasy, imagination, and science fiction and mythology, and they have a brother who was like, oh my God, this is really ridiculous. Give me the almanac, you know, give me the sports page.
Just the facts, man.
Right, and they're both brothers. So it's hard for me to say. I mean, somebody will probably be out there saying there really is a difference between how boys and girls learn. But look at the research now on math. And because society figured boys learn math better than girls, they geared it to boys. And girls were, you know, kind of left out of the invitation to enjoy math or to succeed in math. It was like not a girl's thing. So, and look, you know, and look at medicine. That was never open to women. It was a male thing. And now half the doctors in the country are women. So I think a lot has to do with what we expect and how we, you know, how we handle the patterns of behavior from what we expect. In your case, I think you should just watch the children and see what they enjoy.
I'm glad to hear
and
that.
See what
I do.
Go with the kids.
I do that. I wonder, though, you know, teachers are so rushed and there's so much that they have to do and teaching to the test and getting ready for all of these achievement tests and things. And I wonder how much time is there really to reflect on, you know, to really follow the children's lead.
You really want to bring this topic up? We were having such a nice talk, this program. This is the
I was
topic.
Going to bring it up if you didn't,
but
Dana.
So Dana, this...
Because I think it's sort of like, okay, this is where we need to be by the end of the year, so you better catch up. You better hurry up. This is the way. I think that there is a propensity for that now.
Mm-hmm. Dana,
oh, yeah.
This area to me is one... I mean, this is my 54th year in education, but who's counting? I have never seen a culture so uptight, stressed out, frustrated, pushing, anxious, all the anxiety. The whole culture is like needing a pediatrician to give them medication so they don't, you know, have stomach cramps because of this. I think... We won't go into why, because there's too many, it's not like a simple, I think parents buy into it, and there's a push from parents that I want my kid, I'm worried my kid will not succeed, so I want to stop the play, stop the individualized learning, stop time for fun, I need my kid to succeed, I don't want my kid to be left out, I'm going to take him to the academic early childhood program where he's going to get worksheets and homework. I don't want him in that silly, frilly one where they just play all day, you know. So you have parents who are pushing and anxious, and that gets to the kids. And then, of course, the teachers. I won't even go into the teachers. But I just have an article coming out and reading today, and it's based on a couple of anecdotes. But one of them is, and this goes into the teacher, Dana, they all have the same pressures and they all have the same guideline. They all have the same benchmarks that they have to, you know, aim for. But how do they do it? So this is one school. There are two kindergartens. Just give me a kindergarten. One class, I call it teaching the key of death. It's straight to the test. It's the worksheets. It's no time for moving. It's no time for fun, laughter, song, joy. We are learning to read. We are doing our handwriting, even though some kids' muscles aren't even ready to succeed at handwriting at five and a half years old. You know, what Scandinavian country had the number one education system in the world? Was it Norway? I think it was Norway. Mm. And their children don't start to read and write until they are 8 years old.
Wow.
That's when they start. And we're pushing our little ones in preschools and little, I mean, not our preschool, you know that. But,
well, yeah, I was going to, yeah, in, yeah, they, yeah we are. Some places are, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, a lot. Mm-hmm. But in the same school, the other kindergarten teacher is a master teacher who I happen to know. This is not in Columbus. This is in New York. And everything is joyful. The kids come in and there's music and there's games and there's song, and everything she does is through a joyful way of being with the children. And she has the same guidelines and the same guideposts, but she has to do the calendar. But how does she do the calendar? She has to do seasons. How does she do seasons? So she is meeting the same objectives, but she's doing it without breaking, without betraying the commitment to the spirit of the children. So it's, the great teachers find ways to get through this. And see your son and see how he learns and give them a chance to succeed in the way he learns. But that's a big, tough thing for teachers to do, given mm-hmm. the pressures on them. Does that help? No.
Well, somewhat, but you're going to have to move in with me.
I think you probably could stand me for about an hour a week.
I'm going to get the guest room ready, Mimi. So we'll be waiting for you this afternoon.
Dana, thanks for your call.
Thanks,
you're
honey.
Welcome.
Appreciate
Bye.
It. You know, I think I brought this up the last time you were on the show, but it's still a brilliant idea. For my kid, you know, he used to be a great illustrator. And then somewhere along the line, he started to feel, and you've written about that and talked about that, where they start to feel very self-conscious and something happens, and it could be a person, a place, or a thing. I don't know, but he started to feel very self-conscious about it. And for him, when the teachers would say, okay, when you're done with that worksheet, you can color it in, would be like not fun to him, not a motivating thing.
Yeah, right.
And I thought, gosh, if they could just pass around little baggies with what are those little plastic shoot, I can't believe I can't think of what it, Legos.
Yeah.
Just some little things that he could build something for you out of that. And he felt very confident with that. But it was never that way. It was always about coloring in and you know.
And she probably thought, or the teacher probably thought, I'm being very creative.
Oh, yes. That was a fun thing.
Yeah.
You know.
And see, this is why I think parents need to talk to teachers. They need to go in and say, listen, my kid does not learn this way. My kid cannot be pressured into finishing. He's a slower learner. He's slower. He's smart. He's got it. But if you say you've got 2 minutes to do this, he's going to just block. He's frightened. He knows it, but he can't do it. I mean, I think, and my kid does not like to color in shapes. His art is illustration. He likes to build. I'll bring the things in to give them. Would you try it? I mean, this is why parents need to communicate with mm-hmm. teachers. And it's very important. Because otherwise, how do they know? You know, how do they know?
Right, so right.
I urge parents to go in. And when something creative happens, to go in and go, this is great. That was wonderful that you did that.
Right.
You know, I have the story. Can I tell a
sure.
quick story? I have the story that was in Terre Haute, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Terre Haute. And this teacher got a big ice cream, you know, this big ice cream vats. In like an ice cream store, mm-hmm. you know, and that big ice cream is in it. And then when they're going to throw them out, sometimes teachers are the ones who go around early in the morning.
Ultimate scavengers.
Garbage,
right.
Yeah, scavengers. So she got one of those. She rinsed it out, cleaned it out. She didn't know what to do with it. This is kindergarten. So she made a hole in it, and she turned it into a mouse house. She made a little hole in the bottom, and then every day she put mouse house. Every day she went into school. When it was in school. There was a note in the mouse house for a child. So every day she'd go, oh, I wonder what's in the mouse house today. And she'd take a little note and go, Anne, you have a note from the mouse. Maybe it just said, I like you, Anne. Who knows what it said. So one day this family hears a sound in their downstairs. It's about 6:30 or 7 in the morning. They hear something at the door. And, you know, everyone's afraid nowadays. So the father says, stay in bed. I'm going down to see who the intruder is. So he goes down the stairs, and there's his little kindergarten child. She's dressed. She's standing at the door with her little bag. She's ready. It's still dark. He goes, honey, what are you doing? What are you doing? She says, Dad, I've got to get to school early today. I have a funny feeling that I have a letter from the mouse. So we're talking, you know, the smallest thing can be the biggest thing.
What?
That's what they'll remember forever. Not the 29,000 worksheets.
Right.
Not where you're doing the phonics chart with kindergarten, first grade kids, long vowel sounds and short vowel sounds and long vowel sounds and short. And the kid goes to the restroom and comes back and says, teacher, I think I understand. I just had a long vowel movement. That's a true story.
You know, you just you made me think of why I watched Romper Room every day. So I was still always waiting for her to say through the mirror, you know, she'd hold up the mirror and say, and there's Anne. And, you know, but it seemed like she never did. But I always waited. I always had, you know, high hopes that today was my day. We're going to have to take a quick break. My guest, Mimi Chenfeld, when we return, your emails or you can call us at 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. NPR News.
Ben Stiller was an action star in Tropic Thunder, which he wrote and directed, and played a self-involved male model in Zoolander.
I was thinking about volunteering to help teach underprivileged children to learn how to read. And just thinking about it was the most rewarding experience I've ever had.
He's now starring in the new film, Greenberg. Ben Stiller on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air is coming up today at noon here on WOSU 820, NPR News. Rain today, high around 50 degrees. Tonight, showers likely with a low near 39. Tomorrow, more chance of rain in the morning, cloudy with a high near 53. But we should get back to spring and sunshine on Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 57. Don't forget, you can always listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher online with the Online Archive. You can podcast new and archive shows from all the guests and topics. That's online at WOSU.org/allsides. You can also podcast new and archive news stories from WOSU and NPR. Listen to a story again, share it with a friend, or catch up on news you missed. That's also available online at our website, WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Mimi Chenfeld, the author and educator. and Central Ohio resident. So she's in the studio with me right now. Mimi, thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Ann, for letting me in.
It's great to have you here. You know, I was reading all about creative teaching over the weekend, and one thing I came across was the question, when is freedom a bad idea? And this really struck me because when it comes to assignments, of course, I see everything through the lens of my own son. I can't help it. But the idea that you can do whatever you want to do, however you want to, you know, if you want to write a story, if you want to do this, if you want to do that, to make a point in a lesson. And sometimes for him, that's a struggle, that if it was narrower, it would be more liberating for him.
You know, this is such an interesting point you brought up, and this triggers a memory so much. Years and years ago, I was doing a big workshop in language arts for high school English teachers. It was high school English teachers. And I was trying to say, look, you've got this formula that every book that you read. Now, we won't go into what's going on today with every book the kids read. They have to, who's the protagonist, follow the theme. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could kill every book. You do it twice, they get the idea, then let them read the book and enjoy it. Well, we won't go into that. So I said to this group of teachers, I said, you know, stop with the formula. Here is, which your son would want. Which your son would want, because it's a more narrowing. He would want, like, the book report. He would want, I want that. So I said, that's fine, but give them some choices. This is going back years. I said, so share a book any way you want. Any way you want to say, here's the book I read, and here's something I want to share about it, whether you draw it, sing it, play it, whatever, or here is the book report form if you, that's what you want. So that's where the freedom comes in. But within the choices is this familiar choice. And so none of them would take my, none of them, they all said, no, they were afraid. They didn't want to give the kids the freedom. Roger, my friend Roger Gerhardstein, called me. He was teaching at Grove City or something like that years ago. And he said, I've never had an experience like that in my life. Some kids did the book report, fine. But some kids did tape a video of a dance she created for Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Oh.
Two kids came in and intimidated the whole class. They read 1984, and they did it dramatically. I mean, he went on with, he said, kids who never opened their mouths came in with the most creative ways to show that they understood the book. But in the kids who wanted the book report, fine. There's nothing wrong with that. So I think in that case, you give them freedom, and within the freedom is that choice. Would that reassure
that,
him?
Yes. That's exactly what I was talking about. I guess, you know, sometimes you feel like, you know, you're the only parent. That's just your an individual question. And maybe Dana, too, you just don't know who to talk to and ask about it. So when I saw this, when is freedom a bad idea, I thought, okay, it's not just me. And it was reassuring. We have some emails. Okay. If you would like to email and ask a question or make a comment to Mimi Chenfeld, go to allsides@wosu.org. The first one from a listener writes, I find I was a better learner if I had background music, even if it was just working as white noise. Has there been any research to support the idea of using music in the background during classes to help kids focus?
You know, I think that is a very common reassurance for a lot of children. And many teachers will use soft music in the background. You know, it depends on the class, because there are children in a class who will say, no, that's distracting. And so, you know, that's not a good idea for them. But definitely, if there's a way that soft music in the background is played and not disturbing and not distracting, many children are very calmed by it. I think that's very valid. You know, there's another thing we don't understand. You know, there are certain children who hum. Mm-hmm. There are hummers. When they work, they hum. So I was with these teachers, and one of them said to me, I have a real problem with one of my students. I said, really, what? He said, he's a hummer. And I thought it was a hummer. You know, I thought it was like, he's driving a hummer. Oh, my God, he's only five? You know, he's a hummer. And so he hums. And so she's trying to get him to stop humming because
That's how he works.
It's how it calms him down. So, I mean, we have some, when you think of a class with all the diversity, like this listener who just wrote to you, mm-hmm. she or he is reassured and relaxed with music. Another child will hear one sound and not be able to work. So, you know, you've got a whole class
yeah.
of all these kids with different needs. And you know, we don't appreciate teachers enough. We don't. We
well,
really don't.
That brings us to our next email from another listener. No one wants to use their names today. Okay. This says, when it comes to tolerance and respect, sure they are important, but in the average classroom, most kids are getting plenty of that. What about the equal need for tolerance and respect for the teacher, for the traditions of the school, and important gender differences?
But I don't understand that question. We're talking about respect. That means for everyone. It doesn't just mean for the children. It means for everyone in the whole, in the entire place. It's the climate. It's the way it is. And the differences, not just gender differences, but differences of individuals that are honored. You know, one of my, I went to a school in Connecticut, and it's the most wonderful school. I mean, there are wonderful schools in Columbus, too. And I, you know, Indianola is one of my favorite, and Duxbury, Parkman, Clinton Elementary. There's wonderful schools in Columbus. But this was in Connecticut, and this climate of that school is welcome, warmth, safety, and respect. Everyone, you don't hear a child rude to a teacher. You don't hear a child rude to children to each other. So this is not a question that I understand. It's either respect for everyone or forget it. I just got a newsletter from that school. The custodian was retiring after 25 years, and the children, every class, wrote the custodian letters. And I read them before my accident. I forgot where I was in another state, and we're talking about, you know, how a school is a culture, the culture of the school. And the whole culture of the school is respect. And so I read some of the letters that the children wrote to the custodian, and the entire 300 people were sitting there with tears in their mm-hmm. eyes. Why? Because the children were appreciative of him, and thank you for taking care of us. Thank you for cleaning up the milk when it spilled, that you made the floor nice for us. I mean, it was just children being appreciative, and that was the culture of the school.
So it doesn't have to be an either-or kind of equation.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. If it's either-or, it isn't.
Right. Right. It always reminds me, I know I'm a sap, but To Sir With Love, you know, the Sidney Poitier movie. I mean, the whole point is these children acted like children because they were treated with no respect.
That's right.
And when he started to treat them with respect, they reciprocated.
It's both.
Because
right.
they knew what it felt, sounded
but
like.
But it's not easy to establish that. And it has to be as sacred as a religion. It has to be as sacred as this is a sacred place. And that's the number one thing to achieve before the Long Vowel Movement. You really have to do that. And then everyone learns. No one learns if they're worried and afraid and feel left out and feel bullied or humiliated or scared. No one learns that way.
614-292-8513. And Rod, you're on the air. You want to talk about handwriting, a touchy subject these days.
Yes.
Yes, hi. Rod. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to say that, you know, you mentioned in the, what was it, Norwegian schools, they don't even teach handwriting until the...
I think they're 7 or 8 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, I just wanted to relate an experience that I had. I was in second or third grade, and about that age, and I've always been left-handed. And they tried to force me to use my right hand to write. And here I am in my late 50s, and I still have lousy handwriting.
Well, I don't have that good of an excuse, Mimi, that's not so common anymore.
When we do those kinds of things, Rod, and we did stupid things in the old days, we did a lot of stupid stuff. And we're still doing stupid stuff, but maybe different stupid stuff. I mean, now I don't think that would happen. I really don't think that would happen now. Because we're more aware. We're more, you know, it's like if you read the old novels or if you remember your great-grandfather, this is my favorite son. And this is my no good son. You know, they would just do that. You know, that's why we have epic family novels. But now people know enough not to do that, I think. So I don't think that would happen today. I really don't.
Actually, you know, they're barely even teaching penmanship anymore today. I've noticed. I mean, we were taking penmanship almost all the way through grade school when I was a kid. And they really don't do anything after the third grade.
Well, they're starting them very, very young, Anne, mm-hmm. much younger than their muscles allow, and ridiculous. You know, one of the stories I relate in this article that's coming out for reading the Reading Association, is I was at the dentist, and this dental hygienist was, who doesn't know me, was doing my, and you know when you have a mouthful of tea, mouthful of
they
stuff.
They always
you,
want to chat.
And so she has no idea that I'm in education, and she's as sweet as could be. And she's telling me that one day a week she volunteered in a local kindergarten, but she quit. So I'm going, oh, my mouth is full. Why did you quit? You know, and she said that she couldn't stand the way the kids were taught with sitting and worksheets and handwriting exercises that were very, you know, formalized and strict. And she said she just couldn't stand the way the kids were being taught, the little ones. And then one day, the week before my appointment, a little boy was under his table crying and shaking. And she got under the table and she said, honey, what's the matter? And he was shaking and crying. He said, I didn't do it right. This is the handwriting. I didn't do it right. I didn't. She said, I can't handle it. So she just literally said, I can't do this anymore. But why we're putting kids through this kind of pressure is ridiculous. You know, mm-hmm. You can do it in many ways. You can do it in fun ways. I have wild ways to do handwriting. Wild, fun, you know, muscles to keep the fingers loose and going. And we do handwriting for the seven dwarfs. We do grumpy handwriting, and we do bashful handwriting, and we do dopey. The dopey is the best. Everybody succeeds at that. You know, but there's ways to reassure children and not pressure them and put them in developmentally inappropriate experiences.
Thanks, Rod, for your call. Paul, you're on the air. Hi, Paul.
I wanted to thank Mimi for the first time I heard her 30 or 40 years ago in Toledo. I was among the presenters, but at our early day meal, she got all of us to stand up and gyrate around our chair so our brain would be alert with increased blood flow.
Oh, that's great, Paul. I'm glad you remember that.
We still have a couple glasses with the skyline of Toledo. That conference.
That's
it's
wonderful.
It's an honor to hear you one more time.
Paul, are you still teaching?
Oh, no. I was a scientist at a research lab, but I gave a presentation on how children learn unusual things.
What a great topic. You should still do that.
Really? Keep up the good work.
People ask me if I'm retired. I say, no, I'm just tired. And then I say, remember the Seinfeld where George was fired and he's kept coming in? I said, I'll keep doing what I do until people tell me not to come in. And then I said, they probably told me, but I didn't listen.
I need to thank Ann for all her marvelous guests. So both of you, keep up the great work.
Thanks Paul.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
Thank you, dear.
Bye. We have an email from Lee. They're just rolling in at a nice, steady pace. Lee writes, I'm a kindred spirit, an educator currently teaching a play-based, research-based early childhood program called Music Together. While the kids in my classes move freely and sing, it's the parents that I see being hesitant. Since parents, caregivers are the primary role models for the children, I can see how quickly our society is losing its music making. Some parents might benefit from a community of families who are gathering to make music with no performance outcomes. Like sitting around the campfire.
Yeah. Lee, what you observed is you know, what you observed is the way it is. The younger the children are, the freer they are. The older the children are, the more inhibited, the more restrained, the more repressed by themselves, nobody else. And then the adults, you know, very few adults. And this is why I think we need a big education for parents. Because, as we said before, they are the role models. They need to crayon with the kids. They need to move with the kids. And when I do stuff, I mean, parents will come. And I will absolutely say you are all standing up, like Paul from Toledo, at the Toledo Commons. You are standing up because those kids need you to be there. And you need to move and you need to get over it. Get over it. They need you too much. So your program should do some of those family things. I think if you have this Music Together program, you should have like family night and everybody's got to participate. Like as Ann says, like the old campfire. And it's just for the pure fun and joy of it, not for any product or any winning or losing or score, you know, or you're off the air, you know, dancing with the stars and all that BS. you know, where everybody gets kicked off and everybody gets criticized. And then we want the kids to be kind and nice to each other. That's another topic. But I think that you've got a way that you could really educate parents with your program. I hope you do it.
There was another something else I came across this weekend. The idea of imitation is natural, but is it naturally good? It's natural to imitate and to copy what someone else is doing because it seems like you're fitting into that, you know.
Are you talking in like Irish kids will watch Irish dancing and they'll be already starting the steps and they're imitating, or, you know, like the Greek kids, the little Greek kids at a Greek festival will be trying, you know, is that
the kind of imitation you're talking about? It's kind of like Judith Harris in The Nurture Assumption reviews lots of evidence taken in tribal communities or tribal societies. She concludes that imitation is our natural way to learn. Village children are given over to the care of slightly older children. By imitating slightly older children, they learn to survive and thrive. Many of us have experienced astounding successes by imitating a very successful example for an assignment or task. There could be lots of natural success when we imitate successful examples. That is why I am not surprised to see the popularity of copy work in art classes. However, when we examine imitation as a learning form for today's world, it may be an instinct that is no longer appropriate in the changing environment we live in today.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is a terrific segue into, you know, I have something I do with every age kid, and that's teach them D-Y-O-T. Do your own thing. So we can learn something that's imitated, but then at the end, now you put it together the way you want. Do your own thing. In a culture, the children will learn the dance and music and patterns of a culture. They're going to learn hip-hop, and the kids do. You should see, when I say D-Y-O-T, you should see what kids do. Teachers never saw them do that. The shyest kid is like spinning on his head and using muscles that none of us even knew we had. I can't do any of it because the kids just are watching TV and watching the dance and watching the bigger kids. And that's how they mm-hmm. learn. But then the next step is, okay, put it together your way. So I think both things are happening, and we still have the tribal way of learning. If you go to the Irish festival, you see the tiniest little Irish children already starting to mm-hmm. do Irish dancing, and the Greek children. And they're watching the way people move. And the little soccer kids, when the first time
hockey
I ever went to Europe,
they're running around
those little
sticks,
kids
right.
on the beach are running around with their right. little. And our kids now, they do it. But mm-hmm. 25 years ago, they didn't do it. But those kids grew up with soccer as their sport. And our little kids are doing basketball, you know, basketball. So they learn that way. That is a way. But then we sometimes don't go, okay, now you are an original. Put it together your way. D-Y-O-T. Do your own thing.
We have been blessed once again to have an original on the show, Mimi Chenfeld. Thank you so much for joining us today.
And thank you.
Really appreciate it. It's great to see you again.
Fast.
It sure did. It flew by. That's why we have to do another one sometime. But we have come to the end today of All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus. And streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.